Hey everyone, and welcome to the stream this Thursday night. Thank you for joining me. This is a weekly thing now. We kind of have something going. Sorry for the late start there. I seem to be having a sort of a technical problem with regards to the live chat, so I think I've got it sort of fixed, or rather rigged, so that I can kind of compensate for it in any case. But I'm hoping that you guys can see me all right. So, moving on quickly, I do want to say, I noticed that over at YouTube, they announced a change. A change so that now, or in upcoming, the dislikes will no longer show. That's the new kind of thing that's coming. So you're still going to have the dislike button. You're still going to be able to, you know, vote down, but you're not going to, it's not going to do anything. That's the way that they're going. It's not going to do anything. And I find it hilarious because the timing is really interesting. And by the way, if your resolution is awful, just turn it up on YouTube. It's what they do. All right. So YouTube's getting rid of the dislike count. Now, why would they do that? Because it seems interesting because it's like you got the Biden administration videos, right? And you see these like ratios that are horrendous. You know, it's always like tons of different dislikes, like way more dislikes than it is for likes, despite being, without, you know, objection, of course, the most popular United States president ever. Right? No arguments there from me, because, you know, I wouldn't want to question anything related to that election. But there's that, and then there's the fact that we're kind of getting toward the end of the year while you'll have that YouTube Rewind, which, for anybody who is familiar with this, is this thing where YouTube gets a bunch of different trans people and whatever and hashes together its video montage of what the year has looked like from the perspective of the most left-wing degenerate people possible, and then it becomes the most disliked video on the entire platform and does so every single year, which is, I mean, fabulous, right? But in any case, that's what happens. And so now you have the button, but it doesn't do anything because that's what they think about the people who, you know, issue a negative opinion. I'm not even joking, this is literally what they're saying, that they've issued this announcement earlier today. They sent an email out to anybody who actually creates videos saying, hey, we're gonna just get rid of this function, sort of, but we'll make people feel like they have some kind of power by leaving the button there and just invalidating any sort of power that it had. And really, it didn't have any power to begin with, right? It was just a voice of opinion. That's all it was. For, you know, people just literally saying, I don't like this, you can't do that anymore. It will help one of my videos, though, or two. I put out these, my two most hated videos were both about DuckDuckGo, the search engine, and about the fact that they basically fund these left-wing organizations and yet at the same time sort of present a pretext of being conservative, and a lot of people think that they're conservative, and so I put out these videos explaining that that wasn't the case, and then a bunch of people seemingly from DuckDuckGo came over and got them really kind of irate. So those are the two videos that are officially hated. I was accused of being a Google shill, which is the only instance that I have ever been accused of being a Google shill, but on those particular videos about DuckDuckGo, that's like the thing, like this assumption that because I was opposed to that particular search engine and recommended other search engines which were not Google, that I was in some way helping big tech and Silicon Valley, like I was just in favor of Google. It was actually amusing. Honestly, I enjoyed the experience in a lot of ways. Anyway, I guess we should move on because I'm just kind of on this like tangent that's not going to end. So moving on, the United States Navy just named a ship after what they're calling a gay rights leader, Harvey Milk, and then had the ship christened by a trans veteran. Now, I'll start off by just go ahead and showing you this ship, because I'm not making this up. A lot of people think that this is like a fake story, like this is Babylon Bee or something. No, this is real. They actually did name a ship after this, I'm just going to call him a homosexual icon, okay? But it was the guy who was the first openly gay man to be elected to public office in California. Seriously, just look at these people. I mean, can you look at this and just not think that we're becoming a laughingstock to the entire world? I mean, because that's what it looks like. Absolutely. And, you know, this is also a man who, and I know you're not going to be surprised when I start, by the way, I'm having some internet issues, so I'm kind of hoping that we can still do this tonight. But it's not certain. In any case, this particular homosexual man who we are idolizing as a nation, right? Because you're not idolizing him, and I'm certainly not. But, you know, nationally speaking, yes. He was a 30-something-year-old man who was into 16-year-old boys with drug addictions and then used their drug addictions against them in order to be exploitative. Some of those boys would later go on to commit suicide. This is the type of person to whom we now name our ships after. Milks, I'm sorry, calling him that is just ridiculous. But anyway, his early political campaign was funded in part by Jim Jones, you know, the cult leader, the one who was behind the whole mass murder suicide thing. Yeah, that Jim Jones, who also was into young boys. It's like these people kind of click together. And by these people, you can read into that what you might, you know, pedophiles or homosexuals. There's overlap. I'm not going to pretend like there's not. And then, on top of that, the ship was christened, if we can call it that, by Paula, Nira. Paula is a man, the first transgender Navy veteran to have his discharge documentation updated to reflect false pronouns. Honestly, it feels like I am being employed by the Babylon Bee, like I'm like running some kind of satire piece. Like, our military are becoming the village people, and we're all supposed to be like, well, that's perfectly normal and acceptable because it makes some people feel better. It's like any adversary that we possibly have will not be intimidated by the Harvey Milk gay ship. I'm just going to put it like that. I'm sorry, I just don't think that they will. I don't think it even presents exactly the right message, let's just say. And this is me trying to be nice here, honestly, but it's difficult to kind of be nice on a topic like this. And what is the point of the military in any case? Is it really to just make us feel better? Is it really about the feels? As I don't think it is. Like, for example, I've talked before about one of the reasons that I don't think women should be in combat, which was because basically it's not up to whether or not that makes them feel better. It's up to whether or not it improves our readiness to the world. Because when you go into the military, it's not about you, right? That's the whole point. It's actually about defending the nation. At least in theory, that's the point. And therefore, you're supposed to just kind of surrender that part of you, your own ego, to the greater cause. That's part of it. And so that's kind of a notion that I explored a lot more in other videos, specifically about the female draft and also about women entering combat roles and why it's a bad idea, even if some woman thinks that, you know, go women and go feminism and all of that sort of thing. Doesn't matter. Similarly, here with the whole trans and gay stuff, it's like an attempt at like attention seeking via military, and ignoring what actually matters as a military completely. Okay, anyway, just send the stunning and brave woman into the battle. Yeah, I mean, seriously, it's just kind of like, you know, I listen to or read stories like this and I'm just kind of, I guess, shocked, because you would think that it's somewhere in the military chain of command there would be somebody who would say something to the effect of, maybe this is a bad look. Like, maybe this isn't the sort of look that we want to project to the world. Is that really that hard for us to believe, that somebody in our military would think that that was something that ought to be said? Well, apparently so. Apparently so. Anyway, let me get a drink and then we will move on. Okay, so over the last week, Project Veritas was raided, or rather, several of the journalists there, including James O'Keefe, the founder and CEO of Project Veritas, was raided. And there's a lot to kind of unpack here. Firstly, just to kind of get the sort of details out of the way, they were raided because the FBI wanted a diary. Apparently, the diary of Ashley Biden, the daughter of our president. And Project Veritas had apparently this diary. They could not confirm whether or not it was really her diary, whether it was really authentic. And for that reason, they did not publish it. They did not go public or have plans to go public with it. They just kind of sat on the whole thing, which is what you'd expect from, frankly, any journalistic outlet who can't confirm whether a source is real or not. All right? And then they got raided by the FBI, which kind of confirms that it was real. But inside of this diary, it's alleged that Ashley Biden, the daughter of, again, our president, had inappropriate showers with her father and other such things. So there's kind of a, well, there is, I shouldn't say kind of, there is a pedophilic element to it. And yet what we're focusing on, for some reason, is the fact that James O'Keefe had the diary and how he got it, as opposed to the fact that these allegations are in them and whether or not they're real. At least that's what the FBI's focused on. Like they hear about this thing with a potentially pedophilic relationship there. I say potentially because, you know, I don't know. I wasn't there. And the FBI's like, well, how'd you get the diary? And that is the main focus of the investigation. Like, what is it with our intelligence agencies? Seriously, it's like the intelligence agencies are absolutely awful and incredibly corrupt. And that seems manifest in this case. And in any case, they didn't just raid. They did their kind of early morning FBI raids, according to James O'Keefe. They did an early morning raid on his home over in New York. And he said, I'm just going to read this. He says, quote, banging on my door, I went to my door to answer the door, and there were 10 FBI agents with a battering ram, white blinding lights. They turned me around, handcuffed me, and threw me against the hallway. I was partially clothed in front of my neighbors. They confiscated my phone. They raided my apartment. On my phone were many of my reporters' notes, a lot of my sources unrelated to this story, and a lot of confidential donor information to our news organization, end quote. Now, it seems kind of convenient, doesn't it? It's like the FBI decides to kind of move in and steal the things that he needs, that James O'Keefe needs for his work, which includes the sources that he has. And he's somebody who before has told us that there are sources inside the administration, right? Yeah. And yet, the FBI is just helping out, you know, helping out the Biden administration in recovering this diary. I mean, seriously, guys, it's like you hear about these intelligence agencies and there are so many people who just kind of want to cheer for them anytime that they do something that for a second looks good. And I'm just sitting here going, no, these intelligence agencies just kind of basically need to be vanquished at this point because they are so corrupt to the core that I don't see any potential for fixing that. And It was O'Keefe who actually said, or repeated rather, that the process is the punishment. That's something that you might have heard. But it's in these cases like this, when you've got the FBI showing up at the home of a journalist, remember, because that's what James O'Keefe is. That's not supposed to happen, because the fact that he, you know, has a source of document, we never sent the FBI over to journalist houses, say the Washington Post or the New York Times, right, and said, well, where did you get this confidential information? Or this confidential diary. Can you imagine the Washington Post having their journalists raided in the middle of the night because of some source that they got and the FBI wanted to get it back? No, that's not how it works with actual journalists. It's just not. And that is what was happening. Oh, is happening, rather. And it sends a chilling message. But as far as the process being the punishment, the point here is that with someone like this, you know, you've got the FBI showing up, so you're talking about a criminal case. Is it likely that James O'Keefe is going to prison for having a diary that was given to him? Well, no. No, it's not. And yet, he's going to have to, you know, pay a lot of money in legal fees. That's the way that the system works. You end up having to need a lawyer, and lawyers are charged, what, $350 an hour or so? So the process itself is penalizing, but it's more than that because it's also terroristic in itself, because he wasn't just, you know, getting his call from his lawyer to turn himself in or what have you. Rather, they showed up at his house and terrorized him and humiliated him in front of his neighbors, as he said, took the property of his. I mean, there's a lot that's gonna weigh on him now that there's an actual criminal case involved here. I mean, seriously, there are a lot of layers to unpack. And again, and I can't say this enough because it may seem like I'm being a bit redundant, but it's important. He's not a guy who's a thief of a diary. He's a journalist and one of very few that currently exist in our age. Like, real investigative journalism was dead prior to Project Veritas. I think I can say that with some degree of confidence. And you've got this one organization that's been doing it for a few years now. And been actually breaking stories in a way that, I mean, seriously, I can't think of any organization that does that in the modern age, I mean, that's that type of journalism was dead, and then he brought it back. Okay, anyway. Yeah, we'll get to Kyle Rittenhouse in a little bit. As far as we've got the Epoch Times, well, okay, but my point wasn't that there aren't real journalistic outlets, but rather we're talking about actual investigative journalism that's done by themselves. And as far as I know, the Epoch Times, or as they say, Epoch Times, doesn't actually do their own investigating in that manner. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's not the case. All right, anyway, okay, we're going to move on in a second. And yeah, they do want to terrify people into not giving any anti-establishment views, and that's increasingly being put forth in a very flamboyant way, because you've got the White House actually issuing declarations about what an extremist is, and then overlapping what an extremist is with what somebody is who's anti-government. And it's like, well, what is anti-government? You mean someone who's anti-big government? Because I know a lot of people who are anti-big government. I know the founders of America were very anti-big government, right? They would certainly be very anti-government in its current form. Is that extreme? Well, yes, actually, by the Biden administration's viewpoint. And so they're trying to create a sort of environment of fear. Yeah. I don't think all of the chats are coming through tonight. I'm doing the best I can to kind of manage, but D-Livers do not seem to be coming through. Just kind of warning you. Sorry, guys. All right. Moving on for now, though. Let's talk about Canada for a minute. Because there's a university in Canada, Dalhousie University in Nova Scotia, that has been embracing the racial hiring. And I keep getting told that anti-white hiring doesn't happen, that it's not a thing, that I'm basically losing my mind, you know, that it's not true that basically white people in our modern society have become A, the scapegoats of society, and also people who, well, I guess you could say, are most persecuted, experience the hardest time in areas like academia and in hiring, which is, well, what, the bulk of your life, right? I mean, these are the two kind of main tenets of your life when it comes to things to aspire to, you know, outside of, you know, actual God and culture and family, of course. But, you know, yeah, they're creating an environment, and they, I mean, the people who are creating our culture right now, for the worst, are creating an environment where people who are white have to work against a prejudicial system. I think that's very fair to say. And so anyway, I want to show you this picture that I came across for an actual position at this university, Dalhousie University, okay? So here you go. It's assistant professor of experimental chemistry. And then if you look about halfway down this paragraph, it says, this position is restricted to candidates who self-identify as a member of one or more equity-seeking groups, see below. And then it goes on and on. So, it's fascinating to me. First, the self-identification. Like, would they really be okay with somebody who's white but self-identifies as black? I don't really think so. I think that's specifically to, you know, gender and sex, but in any case. So I went from that and I decided to go ahead and look. Well, what groups is it that they're in favor of? I mean, don't get me wrong. I already knew. I'm not trying to be obtuse here. But I did want to make sure. And so I clicked on through and it says the university encourages applications from, and it has a list, Indigenous persons, persons with a disability, racially visible persons, women, persons of a minority sexual orientation, and all candidates who would contribute to the diversity of our community, unquote. Okay, that's the full list, all right? So just asking. Would like a straight white man contribute to the diversity of the community? The answer is no, because as we've established so many times on this stream, diversity simply means non-white. So if it's like, if you don't fit into that because they've like missed something somewhere, they're like, well, you know if you're non-white, right? So you know if you're diverse. But my favorite part of that was racially visible persons. Like, I don't think I've heard that term before. This is actually a new one for me. And what does it mean to be racially visible? I mean, okay, seriously, as opposed to those who are invisible? And the answer, of course, is yes. That's exactly right. Because these people, the non-whites, are visible to our elitists of society now. So those who enact diversity quotas and the like. Those people are visible, whereas we are invisible. You're getting it now, right? They're serious. They're actually serious with this term. I find it amazing. It's like the idea that white people don't matter, shouldn't be seen, and shouldn't be heard is something that's been kind of battered around for the past 5 to 10 years flamboyantly. Longer than that if you've been paying attention, but flamboyantly, I'm going to say 5 to 10 years. And increasingly so over time, right? As you get closer to the current time, they've been a lot louder about it. But this is, I think, the first time, okay, that I've seen like an actual university so clearly say white people don't exist, or at least don't exist in a way that has value to us. Because that's what it says. When you say, you know, that white people are racially invisible, which is implicit by saying that non-white people are racially visible, then you're saying that those people might as well not exist and do not exist in our sense of consciousness, do not exist in our sight. So that's kind of fortuitous as to the direction that we're going. If you were ever wondering, you know, what are white people going to be seen as in society in the next 10 years, I think it's pretty clear at this point exactly what white people will be seen as. In the way, and, you know, people who should be completely ignored. And you already see that. It's kind of like the whole thing with mansplaining, right? Which is when a guy talks and a woman doesn't want to hear him. And so therefore she's like, well, you're a man. You don't have anything to add to the conversation. And similarly, you had white-splaining that popped up after that, which was, you're white and therefore you don't have anything to add to this conversation. It's the same thing. It's this idea that because you're part of this group that we have tarnished as a group that we don't want to hear, because you're part of it, you can't possibly have anything to add. Because you, as an individual, are nothing more than the product of the group from whom you come and the group that we place you in, right? Because you might be part of plenty of different groups, some or even most of which you choose. You choose who you associate with, you choose what church you go to, and so on, right? You have your own little communal groups. But that's not the group that matters. The group that matters to the left are the groups that they have created and the groups that they acknowledge. And they decide that if you're white and if you're a man and if you're straight, and you know, these are the groups they've created, and of course the opposites to that. Well, if you're one of those groups, the white and the straight and the male, most especially if you're all three, you simply don't have any opinion that they want to hear, because your opinion really isn't a diverse one after all, is it? And so how would it, as they put it, contribute to the community? Well, you know, it wouldn't, at least not as they see it. And it's a really troubling sign of the way things go, because when you look at totalitarian regimes of like the 20th century, and there are plenty, this is what you see first, is a type of dehumanization of the group that they end up later trying to exterminate or starve. I know there's a lot of overlap there, because starvation is a method of termination. That you can look at the Holodomor and so on if you actually want to do some research into what communism was. But in any case, if you do any of that, it should trouble you. If you know any of that, if you know any of the history, it should trouble you when they take one group of people and say, you don't have value and you're basically less than human. And when you have universities doing it and doing it publicly in actual, you know, publicly available job applications, I think that should be a very startling sign for anybody who's still in denial about the sort of society that we're moving toward. Some random bloke says it's the countdown to genocide. It is. It really is. And I think that there are still a lot of people who kind of have their eyes shut to what's going on. And that's why almost every show that I do at this point, I try to bring attention to at least one case of this. These aren't small cases. These are like big university systems, and in many cases like big corporations and so on, who are flamboyantly and without apology enacting these policies that say that either white people are lesser, you know, that they are unwanted in one way or another, or in this case, that they basically don't exist, right? I mean, that they're invisible, racially invisible, let's say. I wonder if this term is going to catch on more in the future, and I would lean towards saying yes. It seems like one of the kind of euphemistic terms that the left would actually kind of like and gravitate toward. Anyway. Yeah, I don't think self-identification, guys, is going to work. I don't. As soon as they see you and see your white skin, it's going to be like a uniform. And they're like, no. All Marxists do is generalize about people is one of the comments. Well, yeah, I mean, they put people into groups so they can divide them. Because if people aren't in groups and aren't divided, then society doesn't fall apart. And if society doesn't fall apart, you can't rebuild it in your idea of a utopian vision. And I say utopian, of course, a little bit sarcastically, because I don't see utopia being built on the bodies of the people that you've murdered because they were in your way. But, you know, I'm not entirely in unison with people over that, because there are plenty of communists who think that was perfectly acceptable in order to bring about their vision of, I guess, you know, I'm reticent to say utopia because, you know, they say it and yet it's never happened. So I try not to encourage delusions, and that's why I'm so consistent between this topic and the trans topic. Anyway, before we get off on that tangent, let's talk a little bit about Kyle Rittenhouse. I do want to get to him because I promised that I would in the description. And I have had internet issues flaking out, so I want to make sure that we talk about Kyle a little bit. And I covered the Kyle Rittenhouse situation and what actually happened from the video and so on right after it happened. The video that was on YouTube was taken down months after it was uploaded by YouTube. It was given a strike. It's still available on the other platforms. The title of the video is Kyle Rittenhouse is a Hero, and you can still find it at GabTV and Odyssey and BitChute and Rumble. If you'd like to see it. And frankly, I encourage you to see it because, you know that they're a good video. You know it's a good video if YouTube doesn't want you to see it. In any case, now that the trial is actually going on, and it seems like we have some more to talk about this week, you know, even Tulsi Gabbard actually came out, and she's, you know, of course, a Democrat, albeit a little bit less left-wing than the rest of them, not that saying a whole lot, but even she came out and said that the Rittenhouse event, which she called a tragedy, would have been avoided if the government had protected the people in Kenosha, which is true. Like, he and the other people who were out there with rifles wouldn't have been out there with rifles if the police were doing their jobs, right? If the police were actually doing their jobs, we would not have had a need or a cause for random people defending businesses. Instead, you had police who, though in the cases in which they were on the ground in Kenosha, they were in armored vehicles and refused to get out even to make the arrest as Kyle Rittenhouse tried to turn himself in. You know, if that kind of gives you a sense of what we're talking about. They were doing such little policing, they wouldn't even get out for a second in order to, you know, deal with the guy who was trying to turn himself in and trying to get their attention and had his, you know, rifle in front of him. They didn't care, right? But it's an interesting point because it kind of demonstrates the whole reason to bear arms in the first place. The government isn't always going to be there to protect you. You know, even presuming that government and police are inherently good in some sense, or even that you want them some of the time, that doesn't mean that they will always be there to protect you. And it's one of the bigger arguments, you know, for gun rights. The main argument, of course, being to resist tyranny when government does overreach. But in any case, government may not always be there. And in the United States, it's even been ruled, it's been the Supreme Court, the police do not have a duty to step in and to protect you and to act as law enforcement. They don't have a duty to, you know, act as police. I know it sounds kind of like a bad joke, but instead they literally don't have to act. You can't force them. You can't force them in the courts and so on. And so when you have a mayor and a police chief who fail to do their jobs, you know, one because of the other, in this case over there in Kenosha, there's nobody who's going to step in and say, well, you're required to do it. No. And so you ended up having businesses hire private people and you had private people donating their time to walk around and to try and prevent some of the calamities that were taking place. Now, Kyle did that, of course, and now Kyle is being set upon by the same people who were negligent, and I don't mean that in the legal sense, but I mean that in the moral sense, in regard to Kenosha, right? Because it's the same, like, entire bureaucracy that is after Kyle that should have stepped in and actually had the mayor and sent in the police chief who would have sent in the actual police to actually do their jobs instead of just running around in armored vehicles and refusing to do their jobs, right? Yeah. Now, this prosecutor has been running one heck of a trial, and by that I mean he's been doing a terrible job. At one point, the prosecutor tried to blame video games for the reason that Kyle got an AR-15, as if Kyle had just been playing Call of Duty and then decided he wanted to reenact it and went out to Kenosha with grand plans. Exactly. I mean, but a lot of people believe this stuff. I don't know how much time you guys spend on social media, because really you shouldn't spend much at all. But there are people who think that Kyle Rittenhouse went to Kenosha, Wisconsin with the desire to run around and shoot people, most especially black people, which is fascinating because he didn't shoot any black people. So, you know, they tend to think that he's like some white supremacist who was hunting black people and, I don't know, missed a lot, I guess. I mean, it's hard not to make a joke. I realize it's a serious situation, but there are people who are so incredibly misinformed about just the most basic details of like who got shot and what race they were. It's just, it's insane. Now, since we're talking about social media, actually, Facebook blocked searches for Kyle Rittenhouse today, which meant that, I don't know if it's still the case, but it's certainly earlier today, because I searched myself and I read news stories that related to this as well, that when you search for his name so you could, you know, see what people were saying about him and kind of get some judge of public sentiment, there were no results that came up. There was a counter that showed how many hundreds of thousands of people were talking about him, but it wouldn't actually display the results, which you can read something into that. I mean, I think it's these big tech companies that are playing their usual games of trying to manipulate public sentiment by preventing you from seeing that other people basically feel as you do. And that's one of the things that they do to try and swing elections, in fact. And it does swing elections. In Chicago, the police department there is ready, apparently, for the Rittenhouse verdict, meaning they're ready for the rioting already. It's going to happen any day now, they expect, because they expect that there's a good chance, at least, that Kyle will be found not guilty. And in so doing, you know, riots will set up in every Democrat area. that is the way that it is. These people go and destroy their own cities. I'm just saying that is exactly how it is in various different spots. It's not like the really Republican conservative areas that get burnt. It's just like these Democrats destroying Democrat areas. And anyway, so in Chicago, as I was saying, the police department is ready and they've canceled all regularly scheduled days off for their officers. They're required to basically be available. And the union is really angry about that, and that's the only reason that it's actually in the press, is the fact that the police union is angry they weren't given enough notice that their cops are supposed to be, you know, available throughout this, I guess for them, catastrophe. But, you know, I think there are these people who are actually hoping that he gets found guilty so that there isn't rioting. And what's disturbing about that is that's the whole reason for the rioting. It's a type of terrorism that's meant to make sure that that they get what they want, right? That in cases like this, that someone like Kyle would be found guilty in order to keep the peace. And it's twisted. And it does look like the case is going poorly for the prosecution. I wouldn't get too confident in that topic. I'm not particularly confident, and the reason for that is because I've seen instances like this be used to try and basically create some kind of confidence in people like us, and then they'll, you know, find him guilty and lock him up and try and basically destroy a sense of hope and camaraderie amongst people on the right. I don't expect justice and fairness in the justice system in these leftist cities where you have a massive nepotistic network, where you have active threats against the jury, and that, you know, is who in general it would come down to, is the jury. And you have the knowledge, of course, that the jury members were filmed. The person who was filming the jury members was not arrested for some reason. But the guy was, of course, required to delete the video, and he did, supposedly. But come on. I mean, you're talking, obviously, that these jury members are under stress or under threat. And, of course, they were also threatened by George Floyd's nephew on top of that. And it's not even just those obvious threats. It's the fact that they know, right? It's the fact that they know that if Rittenhouse gets found not guilty, that there are a lot of people out there who want to riot, who are known for their violence, who get lauded for their violence, who get away with it, right? There are the people, right, in this very trial who got away with it, right? Think about the guy who pointed his pistol at Kyle before Kyle shot him in the arm, right? Notice, no, we're not dealing with the charges for him or the trial for him. We're dealing with the trial for Kyle. You know, this is the kind of spin on justice, and I'm trying to be nice here, but, you know, that's what we're talking about. That's the environment in which we're discussing. And you had in, you know, some of these prior cases, you had jury members who were like, well, yeah, I was kind of concerned that if I voted the wrong way, that was in the, I'm trying to remember the name of the cop who was kneeling on George Floyd, but there were some jury members in that particular case who expressed that, yeah, it was a bit of a concern if they voted the wrong way. You shouldn't have that. And yet we do. Now, that said, the collective left seems to be kind of losing its mind over, it was Derek Chauvin, exactly. But the collective left seems to be losing its mind over the way that the judge is handling the case, because the judge is seemingly attempting to keep a fairly fair trial, which seems so unusual. I mean, doesn't it? You know, there was a CNN panel that was talking about how the judge is just obviously auditioning for Fox News or OANN. And it's just like, I mean, this judge hasn't really done anything that's unusual, I wouldn't think. Or at least, he hasn't done anything that seems outside of what is just and what is fair and what is reasonable. You could say those things are unusual, that's why I decided to go ahead and clarify. And then there was the fact that the judge's ringtone was, you know, the Proud to Be an American song. And that was apparently indicative that he's either a Trump supporter or at least a conservative. Now, okay, but why? I mean, why does it indicate that? Because the Democrats always seem to tell us that they like America. You know, they're patriotic too. It's just that the Republicans and conservatives are evil and fascistic. You know, that's what we're told. And yet, these same people hear a judge's ringtone, hear that it's Proud to Be an American, and they're like, well, look at the proof. He might as well have a flag t-shirt. You see what I'm saying? I mean, for the people who claim that being patriotic is not a conservative or right-wing thing, they certainly get rather upset when they see somebody in a neutral position, like a judge, who has some indication of being patriotic in one way or another. Let's see if I can zoom this in to fix your chat so I can see him a little better. There we go. Okay, I had to compensate for that tech issue that I was talking about. Okay. Rational Wrongthink says, the judge should have thrown the case out with prejudice when the prosecutor attacked Kyle for relying on the US Constitution. Yes, and it is possible that there will still be a mistrial with prejudice, I believe. See, the defense sought that, just to give people an update. And if that was granted by the judge, that would mean that the prosecution could not retry the case. If the case was thrown out because the prosecutors did acted in such an unconstitutional manner. And that's, I mean, that resulted, and you can go and watch the video, but it was like a 30-minute exchange of the judge yelling at this prosecutor. And it was kind of a relief, because it was like, wow, this judge actually cares about Kyle's constitutional rights. How unusual is that? Now, it also seems, in some ways, like the prosecution have been seeking their own mistrial, like with hopes of a retrial, right? So a mistrial without prejudice, so that they could basically learn from the mistakes that they made this time, know what Kyle's testimony would be like, for example, and then get to do it all over again with another jury that's more, even more familiar with the sort of rioting that would take place afterwards and all of that. And so there is a lot of people, and one of them that's concerned that the prosecution were seeking that, was seeking a sort of more regular mistrial, you might say. And that would be one way that this could all kind of go very wrong. Okay, let me get a drink because I'm losing my voice. with the Kyle case, though, I know I've said this before, but it really does seem like it's self-defense on trial. Because if he were to be found guilty, I can't think of an instance when self-defense would actually be a valid claim. Like, if you've got a guy who's running away, and then somebody chases him and then dives at his gun, and then he shoots. I mean, seriously, it really does seem as clear-cut as it gets. And then later on, he's, you know, we've seen the video of him being cornered, him being attacked, hit in the head with the skateboard, and then, you know, of course, the guy who tries to shoot him, and he, you know, disarms that guy, and so on. It really should be a clear-cut case. It should be a case that is not being tried. You should have had the DA's office look at the evidence in this case, help like we did, you know, in that video that no longer is on YouTube, and determine what actually happened and say that there's no reason to try this case. And yet, we're terrorizing this kid and, you know, he broke down on the stand and all of that, which was really unusual to have Kyle actually testify, or to have, you know, somebody in a trial as big as this take the stand himself. That was really unusual. But I think that it helped to kind of show that this isn't some monster who went there psychopathically to try and just shoot at random people. Because, again, that's the media narrative. It's been the media narrative and the left's narrative. I know, lots of overlap, I get it. But it's been the narrative the whole time, is that he's this evil, psychopathic, probably white supremacist who went there to try and hunt and kill people. And so when you saw this kid actually take the stand and describe what happened in a very emotive way, I think it could only have helped. Because ultimately, you don't know how many jury members have been swayed over the past however many months by the media coverage of what happened there, by social media and all the different claims that they saw. Again, it's not a case that should even be on trial at all. But there you go. Top Secret Bear says, how dare that judge have Proud to Be an American as a ringtone? I know, it was amazing just how kind of bent out of shape everyone got. Like, I don't know if you went by Twitter. I don't usually talk about Twitter, but I did look for this particular thing because I thought I'd see all the leftists kind of screaming about it. And you did, which was really hilarious. Like I said, what would be the objection? I mean, seriously, this guy had like an American flag hat and they'd be saying the same thing. Look how conservative he is, because they see what we see. They know what we know, which is that if you are patriotic and proud to be an American, you are conservative or traditionalist or maybe libertarian, right? But you're certainly not on the American left, because the American left have a problem intrinsically with America. Not America has a few problems that we ought to fix, no. But America, in its founding, in its root, and in its ideals and its values, is flawed and should be more like one of those European dystopic countries in which people don't have rights and have to rely upon government for everything, in which the government basically owns them. And, you know, when I saw that ringtone controversy, it was so clear to me, and I imagine it was to you guys too. Here in Britain, we're winning against the criminals. I'm not really sure you're right about that. I'm sorry. I think you've got a lot of fighting to do, and I don't think the culture war is won. So don't get too complacent. Okay, and... all right, let's go ahead and move on. I will be talking about Kyle more, obviously, after the trial, and I'll probably do a long video at that time with the conclusions. But at this point, I just like to kind of give you the kind of coverage of the last week, because we also talked about it last week, and I know that people wanted the kind of update, so I gave it to you. All right. Rational Wrong Thing says, we're definitely not winning here in Australia. I know, I do feel for you. I feel for all those people who are living in authoritarian regimes, and it's I have to pause when I say that, when I'm describing a Western country, right? Because I'm used to saying things like that when I talk about Iran, or with its full name, the Islamic Republic of Iran, or when I'm talking about China, it has a full name too, but whatever, and all these other despotic countries like North Korea and so on, you know, the communist countries. I'm used to referring to them as authoritarian regimes. Doing so about Western countries is a little bit disturbing to the psyche in a way, because it's like, well, you know, I've since the earliest days of me doing these videos, I've been talking about our slippery slope toward totalitarianism, and especially as we kind of give up on the principle of free speech with concepts like hate speech and so on. I've talked about that. But then, of course, the lockdowns came and COVID came, and under the auspices of fighting a virus, there was a massive acceleration at the rate at which countries throughout the West ushered in an absolute state of tyranny. And there are people who are living in conditions that are difficult to even imagine, including in these hitherto considered first world countries. I feel like I'm gonna have to start redefining what first and second and third world are at this point. Maybe we could call you like second world, that way, you know, you're kind of like Soviet at that point. Yeah, exactly. Yes, you're correct that America is also in a terrible socialistic system, or leaning that way increasingly over time. However, it's not Australia yet. And that sounds bad. It sounds like I'm, you know, at least we're not that bad. But, you know, I think it's important to keep in perspective that there are other countries that are, and people over there who are suffering even worse, and we should use them as reminders as to what we can kind of fall into if we're not paying too much attention, if we're not willing to fight back, at the same time as offering some compassion to the people who are trying to live under that system and who are surrounded by people, because it is the public's fault, right? Not all the public, but there are, it is the majority of the public, else it wouldn't be the case that that system exists. So these people, who are many of whom join our streams, who are surrounded by others who don't share their same understanding of freedom or their same love of freedom. And that can be an incredibly isolating experience. So I absolutely feel for you. Okay. Top Secret Bear says, the worst part is that so many Australians can't see it even though they're living in it. Well, yeah, and none are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe that they are free. You know, famous quote there. And that was always my problem with England. Was always that, you know, whenever I speak to someone who was from England, they were always like, well, yeah, we have free speech. What, you could do what you do from over here. It's like, really? Really? Could I describe the gay ship the way that I did in the beginning of this show? Really? Like, well, no, because that's hate speech. And it's like, well, then I don't have free speech, you know. But it's always kind of difficult, because you always have to kind of break through these margins. And you can't, because you can talk to people. And I know more with the British, because that's where I come from, so I've had the arguments many more times than I have with, say, the Australians. But I've had that conversation a lot. The speech is pretty free here. You can say what you want. And then I explain what it is that I want to say, which is what I say on these streams. And like, well, you can't actually say that, but that's hate speech. That's not really free speech. That's not encumbered. And free speech is, the concept of free speech only matters if it incorporates the speech that the government doesn't want to hear. Because, I mean, opinions that are kind of milquetoast, we didn't need to be protected as rights. We didn't need a constitutional amendment to make sure that the government didn't infringe on those rights. You know, the right to say something that nobody cares about, for example. Okay. All right. Let's move on and talk about Britain some more. See, the British, there are a bunch of like top British universities that are going to offer sex work training. You heard that correctly. These top British universities include Durham, Leicester, Manchester, and Newcastle universities, all going to help with sex workers. I'm just going to quote this. Quote, to help them navigate challenges they might face when escorting, performing on webcams, and stripping, end quote. So, to kind of get through the euphemisms in this explanation, escorting is properly referred to as prostituting. Performing on webcams is properly referred to as making pornographic videos. So that's what we're talking about. That's who the universities over there, top tier universities, are going to be helping out. And Jonah Graham, the welfare and liberation officer at Durham Students Union, said that these workers face stigma. I always think that's kind of an interesting concept, because in the coming society, the society that these leftists are going to usher in, only morality and decency and Christianity will actually be stigmatized. Everything else doesn't need a stigma, you see. And it's like, there's a reason that there's a stigma associated with the sex work. Because at first I was thinking, I read a headline about this story, and I was thinking, well, maybe what the universities mean is that they're going to warn these young people, hey, if you do this, there are massive risks. You know, in the case of escorting, actual physical risk to your person, you can be seriously hurt or killed. And in the case of webcam work, will be nice. You can destroy your life, right? This will haunt you forever, that kind of thing, because you're young and you're stupid and you haven't thought this through and you've lived in this decadent society that's indecent and gross and everything. Maybe you don't get it yet, but, you know, that kind of thing. That's what I was thinking. Maybe that's what the universities meant, but no, that's not what they actually mean at all. They mean how they're going to help these people to deal with the stigma of the fact that they're working as prostitutes. That's England for you. At the same time, it's considered to be, in England, socially unacceptable to be Christian. I read this about 10 years ago, and it's true. It is true that, heck, even like 15 years ago, I can tell you, that if you were openly Christian and you said that you took your faith seriously, people would be uncomfortable around you. That was the experience that I always had, was that they think there was something kind of wrong with you, that you're kind of medieval and backwards and counter to reason. And you kind of heard the arguments from virulent atheists, and those are the sort of responses that you got from most of the Brits. And so it's kind of interesting to me when you talk about stigma in this regard. It's like, well, you wouldn't want people to be stigmatized for doing something that they shouldn't be doing and which is unhealthy for them and bad for their character. No, not that, but they should be stigmatized for being Christian. Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Actually, there's a UK primary school, so young children, which recently asked the boys who go to the school to wear skirts in order to promote equality. Yeah, I'm just going to keep trashing British schools tonight, apparently. Like, I had to go to one, so this is like vengeance because they stole 12 years of my life. But in any case, this was Castleview Primary School in Edinburgh, so Scotland. And boys as young as 3 years old were asked to participate in this degeneracy. They were asked to, you know, wear skirts even though you're boys because you could be girls. 3 years old. That's the sort of society that we're talking about. And, you know, to the Americans who are watching this or listening to this, if you listen to the podcast, be aware that, you know, one of the reasons I like to talk about British topics so much is actually because I see it as almost like a look into the future for what's coming here to America in less than 10 years, because there's this kind of cycle. You see it happening there. In less than 10 years, it'll be here in the United States. And heck, if you look at some of the battles that are going on now in American schools, we're not too far away from this, right? Colin Cody says, Sarah, I'm from Manchester, and I agree with your views about Christianity in the UK. Well, yeah, I mean, well, thank you, and I wish you the best if you are openly Christian over there in the UK. I know it's an unpleasant experience, and I think it's a worthwhile one, and I think that basically British culture depends upon its return to Christianity. I think it's the it's acceptance of secularism and fall towards it is the reason that you have such a anti-freedom sentiment now, as you kind of have Christianity being replaced by a love of government, and also why it's so much more likely to be accepting toward Islam in the way that it is, because people have this sort of replacement urge that's kind of manifest in the fact that Islam is like the fastest growing religion in Britain at this point. Yeah, which is disturbing. But in any case, back to this primary school over there in Scotland. So you've got three-year-old boys being told they should wear skirts. And you had this press release released by this school that says, quote, "We're keen to spread the message that clothes don't have a gender and that we should all be free to express ourselves as we choose," unquote. Okay, but clothes, let's... don't have a gender because they're not alive, that's for sure. However, there are societal connections between certain clothing and sex, or and gender, if you prefer. You know, sex and gender are used interchangeably for obvious reasons, because they're interchangeable. And the whole point of this is to make boys feel like they could be girls. That's the point. The point, despite saying, well, clothes don't have a gender, is to kind of unleash a different gender on boys who were comfortable, who were feeling, well, I'm a boy and I know what boys wear. And now it's like, well, maybe not. The school actually handed out skirts to the children who didn't have any in these cases. Yeah, okay, I was just kind of looking through your guys' comments for a second there to see if I thought maybe I missed something. But, yeah, it's... if you take a three-year-old boy and you see kind of what his understanding of the world is, and then you try to confuse the most basic part of him, you know, the oh, I'm a boy, which is kind of like a very intrinsic part of his identity and his sense of self. You try and confuse that. I think there's something kind of evil about that. I do. I think there's something evil about taking a young boy and saying, hey, what you think is truth, what you think is foundational to your identity, is not. Nothing's for sure. You don't really know who you are or what you are. I mean, you see how kind of troublesome that would be to the psyche of someone so young? Because it would be. And now you've got these different statistics about how like 40% of Gen Z associates as LGBTQ. And it's like, okay, does nobody see something wrong with that? Because I'm sitting here going, why? Is it because there's something in the water? Or is it something else? Or is it the fact that we have societally promoted the fact that you have to be one of these things in order to be cool? And it's one thing to be cool and to, let's say, be cool in a kind of 90s goth way, or in a further back in time punk rock kind of way. But it's different to be cool in a way that results in, when they're 12 years old, taking hormone blockers in order that they may be sterilized for life. And that's where this goes. And it's different to be cool in a way that denies their own sense of reality and engages in a kind of group delusion, right? Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about literally a person not really being sure who he is and being denied that. So about engaging in mass hysteria and mass delusion with children, and it's evil. Something is in the water, it's turning the kids gay. Well, there's lots of stuff in the water nowadays, including the plasticizing agents and so on, which don't have a great effect on the hormonal regulation. But yeah, when it comes to the mental illnesses that are being pushed, I think it has more to do, though not exclusively, but more to do with the way that these kids are taught. And we've seen the fact that it's been pushed in these different schools, especially for like the mentally challenged kids, like specifically schools that are like that, and the rates at which they identify as LGBTQ are significantly higher than anywhere else. Well, why? Well, these kids are just trying to do what they're told to do, and what they think they're being told to do is to identify as one of these other groups. It's what they're being taught, literally. And so they simply have less resistance as, you know, people who are more mentally challenged than anybody else. But ultimately, the problem is the fact that we're forcing kids into this horrific situation, and it's absolutely evil. Chief Toad says it's peer pressure and the natural need to conform. Yeah, and you know, no kid feels like he fits in entirely. So to say, it's exceedingly rare for that to be the case. Every kid feels like he stands out a little bit and would like to join some kind of group. They often join groups that conform in their own ways. Like I mentioned the goth thing before. You know, they were all just being super anti-conformist by all wearing exactly the same stuff and dressing in black and dyeing their hair black and all of that. Yeah, you know, it's silly, but it was also harmless. For the most part, besides their kind of obsession with death. But ignoring that, for the most part it was. So most especially with the kind of punk rock movement, all that. But when it comes to this, there are real ramifications. And especially since what happens is, first, you get the kid to accept that, yes, I'm a trans whatever. And then the kid goes around and dresses in the clothes of the opposite sex and changes its name or what have you, and kind of goes along with it. Well, then what? Well, then every adult plays along in this delusion that wouldn't have if the same child had said, I'm this different age or I'm this different species, but it's perfectly okay because, you know, with sex and quote gender, you're allowed to do that. And then extrapolates from that, well, therefore we have to then give this child hormones that prevent puberty, or that in fact try to create the physical characteristics that are dominant in the opposite sex, like, you know, growing breasts and so on for a boy, and which are irreversible. I mean, it's kind of like you kind of get that sort of inroad, right? And then you go from there and you say, oh no, we don't just stop there. We have to actually make you this other sex. We can get you close with these drugs, and it's totally safe, which they're not. But that's where you are. Anyway, let's move on for a bit. What do you think? Goodness, it's getting late. Okay. So I did want to talk about a Republican, not a conservative, but in any case, his name is Adam Kinzinger, who is a known rhino, and he has been for some time. He's been screaming about the January 6ers. Hey, go ahead and pull up his picture. That's the guy. Doesn't he look so friendly? No. Anyway, he said that on January 6th, he was ready to shoot at the January 6th protesters. He was there in the building and in his office, and he had his gun out, and he was ready any moment to shoot at these people. This is actually what he said. He was kind of excited about it, basically. And this is a... This is a guy who was talking to the Rolling Stone. Again, officially a Republican. He's from Illinois. He's a congressman. And this is how he talks about dealing with these protesters who were upset and had grievances about the election that were shared by the president of the United States at that time. This is how he talked about them. Bearing in mind, these protesters didn't kill anybody. Go ahead and say that again. They did not kill anybody. There were lots of rumors, you know, early on. Three police officers have been murdered by these people. Turns out none of them had. The only person who was actually killed, murdered, was Ashley Babbitt, who was murdered by the police that day, or by law enforcement, I should say. Right? But this guy's not going to seek re-election, he says. We'll see. But Adam is not going to seek re-election because instead he's going to donate his time to making sure that Trump doesn't get elected in 2024. Seriously, that's his focus. He wants to make sure that Trump doesn't get elected. Frankly, I don't want Trump reelected in 2024 either, but I do think it's kind of, I think his reasons are rather different than mine. I think that's pretty clear and obvious to say. Let's see. Well, he's not out yet, no, but he will be. And he's not going to run for re-election. So he says, we'll actually see. Martin says, would this smoke be prosecuted if he shot someone even in self-defense? Well, it depends on what side of the aisle he's on. And it sounds like, I mean, I think it's pretty clear at this point that he's a leftist. So I don't think he would be prosecuted no matter what, it would seem. I'm just letting you guys know, I'm going to wrap up the show in just a few minutes. So if you have any kind of final questions, go ahead and send them my way and I'll do my best to answer them. Yeah, never forget Ashley Babbitt. Absolutely. Okay. I don't want to bring your attention, at least briefly, to what's going on to those January 6th protesters, actually. Because it was just today, on November 11th, 2021, when a DC guard maced one of the inmates in a DC jail for not wearing a face mask, which is evil, obviously, and also illegal. That sparked some kind of fight. The media are still referring to it as a ruckus, so I don't know exactly how much of a fight happened. I don't want to over-speculate here, but what we do know is that tear gas was then deployed by the guards into the, you know, whole chamber, resulting in multiple inmates being unable to breathe or struggling to breathe. Three detainees were taken out on stretchers out of the so-called Patriot Wing, where these, patriots are being held. It's not getting much press, obviously, despite the fact that this is yet another indication that these people are being abused, that they're being treated in a way that is criminal, that they are being treated in a way that violates their civil rights. Still not many people talking about. I know that Marjorie Taylor Greene did actually mention this, to her credit. She's one of very few people who are willing to speak out, in the very least, because that's like a basic thing, right? You know, even if you're limited in what you can do, although she's a lot more able than I am, but even if you're limited in what you can do, you can at least speak out. It's kind of like absolute bare minimum. And that's one of the things I've been so frustrated with so many Republicans, including Trump, about, because Trump waited until, I think it was July, to even mention these people. Well, they can at least speak out. All the different Republicans who are in office, who are elected to represent, should be speaking out for these people. And the vast majority of them are not, with the rare exception of people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and so on. But it's like less than a handful of people who are elected into office have been speaking out for these people. Sorry, my video is freezing a little bit, so I really am going to end the stream shortly. Okay, one second. I just saw a set. Any thoughts on the DC detainees from January 6th? Well, I think I just gave you my thoughts on that. I've covered it many times. I think they're being mistreated. I think it's absolutely criminal that they are still being held, many of them who haven't even been accused of an act of violence, but rather being held there because of their association with, like, the Proud Boys or something like that. Many of them are just being held basically for trespassing. It's absolutely awful and just evil, and so few people are willing to speak up about it because they're afraid that somebody might think that they're, you know, that they're in some way involved or what have you. It's so wrong. Yes, lots of these people are actually still in jail and few people even realize it. Okay, guys, since we are having internet issues and since it's getting pretty late, I am going to wrap up the stream. Thank you so much for joining me, all of you. Again, I do enjoy these streams every Thursday night, so thank you so much, and I had a good night.